wanted to start off with, do you think that AI risk in terms of like AI safety alignment issues, you think those issues have gone mainstream now, where maybe back in the day, a small group of scientists would be thinking about it and, you know, maybe attending conferences and publishing papers. But right now, you know, maybe it's trending on Twitter and maybe a lot of the common population is kind of talking about it and maybe thinking about it. Do you think in that sense, the AI risk or safety issues have gone mainstream where, you know, everyone's kind of talking about it?
Yes, they definitely have gone mainstream. And some of the issues that we've been discussing for years are now being bandied about on Twitter. It's and in discussions and in lots of news articles. It's quite interesting seeing everybody speed running the learning curve that we had about AI risk, AI alignment, and how the first solution that springs to mind never works, and you have to then get to grips with the fact that the problem is actually there's a reason that it's very hard.
Are you happy with the kind of debate that's been happening online and the kind of discussions that happen? So just to give you some context in the sense that I don't know if it's my Twitter timeline or I don't know the accounts that I interact with, but I feel like the doom scenario is very much that's mostly being covered where I think there's a lot of talk about how AI agents will end up destroying humanity. The only counter I see, the only forceful counter example I see to this is maybe Jan LeCun. And again, this might be only my Twitter feed, where Jan LeCun is very, he's very opposite this kind of view that, you know, I feel like he takes the view that AI is ultimately going to be very beneficial and he doesn't really give too much credence to the AI doom scenario per se. So broadly, are you happy with the discussion and debate? And also tangent to that, do you think a lot of attention is being paid to the doom scenarios per se?
It could be much worse. And actually, if you go back a few years and you see what people working on AI safety would have expected from a public conversation on these issues, we were expecting something a lot worse. And so like any discussion, a lot of it is fluff and filler or people expressing opinions, but there has been quite a lot of higher quality interactions and even some movements like to slow down AI developments or to think about ways of regulating them in a much more nuanced and sensible way than I would have expected. So I have been positively impressed by the quality of the discussion. Now, it's so far it hasn't really added all that much. As I say, a lot of people are doing the crash course of the arguments that have happened over the previous decade, but it's still, there are some interesting ideas and it is valuable. And the engagement has mostly been reasonably respectful from both sides.
Do you think that
in a sense, oh, sorry.
So I was wondering, like, in the sense that in terms of the push that companies, I think in this specific example, like I'm thinking about OpenAI, and I think, you know, they're actively calling for regulation. So do you feel like, you know, governments also will have like a huge role to play in this? Or do you think because private players are developing this technology, it doesn't really matter what governments do and, you know, they won't have much of an influence in terms of like development of the technology? How are you thinking about that?
If things end up well, I think the governments will have quite a strong level of involvement. At Aligned AI, we're aiming to make aligned AI, aligned AGI, large language model or autonomous agents who will follow human intent and human values. And if this or other projects for alignment are successful, then government intervention will be required to set the parameters within which these agents can operate, and restricting the agents that can be dangerous. So it's not clear what the governments can do immediately, though that they can do certain investments. They can do some regulations to just slow down developments. They can promote safety. They can attempt to incentivize the private companies who are making them or the open source community to build in more safety into what we're building. I'd be generally in favor of that. Yes, and just to go back to what I was saying before, I've been somewhat pleased that the conversation over AGI or AI regulation seems to have been a lot more sensible than, say, the conversation over social media and some other hot button computer topics in the last few years.
Understood. If I can take a step back, why do you think the public should care about AI alignment? Why should it matter to an average person if the AI that OpenAI, Google, or Microsoft, or aligned AI that is developing, that it should be aligned? Why does it matter?
Because that is going to be their future. Everyone is piling into AI, governments, VCs, lots and lots of money, precisely because they realize this is where the future is going to be determined. The next decades are going to be determined, and possibly the next centuries of humanity are going to be determined by how you harness this most powerful technology. That the human intellect is what has allowed us to grow as much as we have, and to control and damage the planet to the extent that we have. This is creating human intellect in a computer, in a copyable form, in a speedrun form. So if we're successful, then there will be a lot of room for humanity, human intellect, for creativity, for humans choosing their own values, for human autonomy within this framework of this AI helping pretty much everyone on the planet. So if we fail, if the powerful AIs are not aligned, then what the 20 years future from now will be pretty much what the explicit or implicit goals of these non-aligned entities are. So basically, if we manage this transition well, things can go great and humans can remain in control and be empowered in a unique way. If we manage it badly, it's the end of humanity as an autonomous species.
Right. So we'll touch on how things can go wrong. But before that, could you maybe I'm not following the logic between, in the sense that so you mentioned this technology will be critical in the next century, or once it's developed, it's going to be the key technology. But how do you expect that playing out in terms of, if we look at the best case scenario, where we have the aligned AI, we have managed to align the AI agent, what are the steps that you're seeing where the future is bright and shiny and utopia based? Can you walk us through how that happens per se?
Okay, so the main avenue to that would be AI empowering humans. AI as an ultimate assistant for humans doing what they want to do. So you could imagine it starting by, Well, let's put it as an app on your phone if you want. That's the sort of standard way. But a app on your phone that can arrange a lot of things for you with your respecting your intent, helping you to become more the person that you want to be. If your great ambition is to travel the world, to invest money, to be respected in your village, to help other people, to just go for a bit of hedonism or whatever it is, if you have an assistant guiding you through this, pointing out, connecting you with all the events, the people that you would want to be connected with. Just to even take an example, like mental health. When you sit down for a discussion with a mental health practitioner, a therapy session, the aim of that is for you to efficiently become the sort of person that you want to be. And people often go to therapies there. Problem is, therapies are expensive. You need highly trained human practitioners, and their success rate is mild. But if your therapist was on your phone, available on the all the time, and dedicated only to you, when carefully analyzing the results, you could get a much better, much stronger outcome from this. So I expect that people would be happier.
Just to push back on the mental health aspect, like the way I'm thinking about this is like, I don't feel like even in a world, I don't feel like accessibility is a problem in the sense that, let me give you a different example where there are a lot of education apps, where they might provide free education, but it seems like a lot of people just prefer entertainment to education, and they just if they have like one hour of spare time, you would rather watch a YouTube vlog of a random 24-year-old than, let's say, Khan Academy calculus videos. Do you feel like even though accessibility might be solved, where everybody has that access to the best therapist in the world, and who's also catered to their personal preference, I feel like even in that world, people still will be unhappy. This is a different tangent. I understand this is not like AI speak per se, but I'm trying to get at the unsatisfaction or dissatisfaction that humans generally feel. I still feel that that'll still be an unsolved problem.
When I sort of just watch a mindless entertainment rather than something educational, I sometimes feel bad about this. And some other people do as well. But we are wired to enjoy entertainment. And there's nothing wrong with that. So if we had a genuine desire to also be educated and connect with others and to know more, then our AI assistant would find the most amenable, the most compatible way of inserting that. So maybe with edutainment options, maybe it would propose us an educational thing, maybe even only twice a week, but at the moments where it judges that we'd be more most likely to sort of enjoy it or profit from it or accept to go through it. Humans are complex and want lots of different things. And the thing that we sit down to just watch mindlessly, or the first thing we watch, is not always what we always want. It's not what we always want to watch. So an algorithm should serve, in a sense, our higher purpose, in quote, as well as it should serve all our wants. Including the ones that it should give us cookies and make us enjoy eating fiber and vegetables, if you want if you want to phrase it that way.
just to continue this thread, I'm also curious, when you mentioned, you know, people will be able to actively take part in their creative endeavors. Does that also mean that in a post-AGI world, in a post-aligned AGI world, that concept of work will no longer be as how we look at it today? Do you think people would have to work?
I suspect that work will not be as we see it today. You can look, because work is a relatively new, the way we see it today is a relatively new post-industrialization phenomena. Before that, you basically had peasants working in the field. You had aristocrats who didn't really do much work. You had, or apart from some warfare. So you would, So just as work was a, in a sense, a creation of the Industrial Revolution of the factories, it will change. And if you just go back to the old nobility, because that's a good example, the aristocracy. Now, they're not sort of particularly nice people, generally speaking, but you can't really say that they did not enjoy life or felt purposeless or lost in any significant amount. So they were doing stuff. They were interacting with each other. They were meeting, they were organizing things, plotting, making things, decorating their palaces or their small hovels, depending on how rich they were. So it was a life full of interactions and of things going on, of challenges, of friendships and of some betrayals. So it was a full life, even if they weren't working. And even today, the people who don't work in the traditional sense, like retirees and young children, tend to have the highest life satisfaction. So it's not so, the thing we shouldn't be asking about is whether work will continue, but whether humans will continue to have a sense of purpose and community. And that, I think they definitely will.
Understood. I think before moving on to like, how this cannot happen, how we may not get aligned AI, would want to discuss a little bit about paths to AGI or paths to AI. So like to set some context, the recent buzz I feel has been around large language models. So do you feel like just with large language models, we'll be able to achieve, you know, the world we spoke about earlier, this post-aligned world? Do you think that we'll be able to get there just with the progress that's being made in large language models?
So I will put back my academic hat and give you a firm and definite maybe. It's really hard to tell because no one really predicted large language models. This is something so not what was on people's minds.
I'm really sorry. So I want to push back a little bit on this one. In my opinion, it feels like OpenAI, from an outsider perspective, and in my opinion, I feel like they did. It felt like a concentrated effort to put money into large language models. I mean, so it seems like they had this intuition that, you know, as they made the models larger, that they would see a qualitative difference in the responses. So I feel like they kind of went. They kind of knew that this was a sort of direction that it might take.
When I was saying before, I mean sort of say 5+ years before. If you look at people, even people who were talking about AGIs, artificial general intelligences, they weren't expecting this kind of weird, some really impressive generalization capabilities and some really weird weaknesses that we have in the large language model. So in a sense, we're sort of rejigging sort of ethics and a lot of our theory for this new design. So yes, we're going to be making aligned large language models of comparable GPT-4 capabilities or maybe better. But will this be the sort of famed aligned AGI? It could be. It might not be. I'm afraid I can't go any further than that. The horizon, it is not clear what is going to be happening there. We'll hopefully get all the alignment in place so that the next generation, if there's something beyond aligned mega large language models, then they themselves will be alignable using the technologies developed for large language models. That I'm fairly confident of. So yeah, if we can align large language models, we can very likely align the next generation that comes after that. But I don't know if large language models are going to be enough to make the leap. If you'd ask me to guess, I would say slightly... I'd put 2/3 chance that large language models are enough to get to some form of AGI.
Okay. If not large language models, what other way are you most optimistic about that that might, you know, be on its way to being AGI? Like, is there something else you see?
Multimodal systems that build on, say, robotics, and including large language models. This is somewhat of more of an intuitive idea rather than a firmly thought out one. But the large language models have collected the vast amount of data that humans have put online. So if that's not enough, and something needs to go further, then probably it's going to need to have its own source of large amounts of data, and moving about in the physical world is a potential source of a large amount of extra data as well. So that is my guess for what it's worth, which I wouldn't put a huge amount of weight on.
Understood. So like, how can it go wrong? Like, if you're trying to develop an AGI, and you're trying to align it, but in what ways could it backfire? Or could you give us scenarios where it doesn't really work out?
Well, you were hinting at some of the issues before. You said about entertainment rather than Khan Academy. But so it could, there could be, if something is just trained on engagement, say, then something that brings the humans back time after time, keep constantly poking on the button, something that basically turns us into the Skinner pigeons, could be something that, a disastrous thing that comes out of supposed alignment. And if you want a more sort of, and this could unfold over a longer scenario, over a longer time period, as the AGIs get better and better, the large language models, sorry, they wouldn't be AGIs necessarily, get the AIs get better and better at providing us with things that we engage with, or that we think we want, or that we say we want, and at the same time trapping us into this world that we don't like, we don't know how to get out of, because we don't really know we don't understand what's happening to us. Because that would be part of the aim, because everything comes, if the AI's aim is to keep us as entertained and engaged as possible, then they would not allow us to act on our feelings of maybe we should be doing something else. So, yeah.
I wanted to, do you have timelines on, in the sense of like, when do you expect this to happen?
I mean, it sort of depends on how hackable humans are, and what is needed, like, to turn every single human reliably into a mindless drone watching the screen, in the strong sense, might take a long time or a lot of effort. To set us irrevocably on that trajectory might be something that happens very fast.
No predictions like in the next 5 years, 10 years. Do you see that happening in the next?
It is possible that within 5 years, we might be in a irrevocable bad situation. If the AI agents have taken control of various, not necessarily maliciously, just we've put them in control of various parts of the economy, politics, production, entertainment, and humanity no longer understands how these agents are operating, how society is operating, or what we can really do to change it. So it is possible that within 5 years, we might be already in a mistake that we can't correct.
So in that sense, do you think we are moving too fast? Or I think a few months back, there was also this letter that a lot of people signed to, you know, pause or to halt development for 6 months. Like, broadly speaking, like, do you think we're moving too fast, or do you think we need to slow down a bit?
So I think we are moving too fast, but I don't agree with the implicit judgment that safety and capabilities are necessarily opposite of each other. I think we're moving too slow on the safety angle. And because we're moving too slow on the safety angle, this is keeping some of the capabilities locked. So this is keeping some of the capabilities back. You could use GPT-4 today to run your bank account regularly and answer most emails, for instance, and even to coordinate between the two. And you could set it up so that it doesn't often make mistakes. However, doesn't often make mistakes doesn't mean never makes mistakes. And you don't want to have GPT-4 send all your money to a Nigerian prince or to the spam that has been made specifically to exploit large language models vulnerabilities, which are different from human vulnerabilities. So in a sense, we have the capability to do this today, but we don't have the capability in practice because the AIs are not safe enough. They're not reliable enough. So until we get some of the safety and reliability pushed further, we can't do a lot of the capabilities.
How do you think about the open source versus closed source way of development? I think just to set some context again, I think OpenAI feels that most of this development has to happen in closed environments, or like, you know, it should not be released to the public because of its dangers or the way that it can be misused. Whereas I think Facebook thinks about it differently, where I think they keep releasing models so that people can play around with it and, you know, maybe suggest defects, and it also helps in like improvement for their future versions as well. How do you think about this? And, you know,
I think we should be careful of slogans or connecting it with the open and closed environments of the past. Like, I've been in favor of open source for quite a long time, and it has been mainly entirely beneficial for the world. And for most technologies, this is a very good way to go to spread the wealth and the possibilities. And if other people than OpenAI have a DALL-E 2 equivalent, this is a positive thing for the world. More people can play with it, more people can use its abilities. But when it comes to AGIs, the sort of old paradigm shifts. Oh, paradigm shift, damnation. shouldn't be using cliches like that. But the old way of thinking about it is not necessarily correct. It might be that the open sources are more dangerous, more buggy, more prone to cause disasters and inequalities if you have open source AGIs than if you have more closed source ones. The debate is on. So I would say that my feeling is that the open sourcing of the current large language models doesn't really matter all that much, or the closed sourcing of them. It'll be sort of the next few generations of them where it'll really start getting important. And if we can get alignment technology into a lot of AIs and other models, then spreading this is very useful. Because part of the question is, I've been talking about an aligned agent, or everyone would have their aligned agent, but a lot will depend on how these different agents interact with each other. Can they reach reasonable compromises easily with each other? Can aligned agents control potentially unaligned agents that are released? So if alignment and cooperation go together in agents, and these have been developed, then I think sort of open sourcing everything is the best we can do at that point. It's great, because the AIs will be collectively aligned and able to control and marginalize any dangerous AI within the collection. There are some other scenarios, like if it turns out that AIs have to be more centralized, that a bad actor AI can really cause a huge amount of damage if not controlled, where maybe something at the more centralized or government run even, or some level like that, or maybe corporate one would be the better outcome. So in a sense, it depends on the shape of the future that we don't know yet. I think for myself, with our alignment tools, that probably I would come down in favor of the open sourcing, but there are things that could happen to make me change my mind completely.
I kind of thought that there would only be need for, like, if OpenAI cracks, or if some company cracks, the AGI, then there will be no need to create another AGI. But you don't seem, you think it's not the case. It's not that case where, just because even if you succeed in creating an AGI, and if you align it, there are chances that other companies might be working on it, and there is a risk that they might create something which is unaligned. But also, you seem to be suggesting that multiple companies can develop their own aligned AIs, super intelligence, is it? Like, you see that kind of world?
It might happen. And I used to be far more convinced that, let's say, single AGI super intelligence was the more likely scenario. It's also one of the easiest to think about, so it's nice to work with. It seems to me more likely today that we might have competing and cooperating agents of different levels of intelligence and capabilities. least for a longer transition period of, say, 10, 20 years. Well, if you have billions of agents, artificial agents, and they are cooperating very well with each other, they have some agreements. They're each acting in, say, one human's interest or in some group of humans' interest, or maybe in the interest of a law or of a country or whatever. But if you have billions of them and they have found a way to cooperate effectively with them, there is a sense in which, and in which you could consider this whole thing as a single agent with a very complex goal. So at that point, it's more sort of, it's whether you call it a single agent or billions of very cooperative independent agents is a bit of a moot point. But I expect that cooperating agents will probably move towards the more single agent like behavior. But as you can tell from the fact that it's sort of acting in everyone's interests and in interests of different groups or things like that, it would be a single entity with very, very complicated and diverse goals.
That would make it dangerous, though, no? I mean, that's a feels like a single point of failure kind of issue.
I mean, it's, again, it is maybe effectively a single agent, but it is in practice a billion cooperative agents. So it's not got a single point of failure. And if I was an AI, I can solve the single point of failure issue for myself quite easily. I'm pretty sure this entity could do that as well. But what you're saying about single point of failures is relevant for, say, an early AGI, the sort of scenario where maybe you try and build a superintelligence and launch it and say, okay, optimize the world in our interests. And that is a single point of failure. You get one chance at it. That is not the approach that we're pursuing. We think that alignment can be built upwards. You can get things more and more aligned. So you can start by aligning the large language models of today and extend that to more and more powerful agents. So it does not come as 0-1 on a single AGI.
What is your thinking on the hard takeoff or soft takeoff? Like, my understanding on this is like, how quickly will we get to see like super intelligence? Is it going to be extremely fast after like some kind some progress, some technical advancements, or do you expect it to rapidly, you know, I think the case is recursively self-improve. How are you thinking about that? And is that like a very important thing to even like consider?
Well, AI development seems to be speeding up recently, which means that where a slow takeoff is more likely. Because if you a fast takeoff, you would not see the improvements. Basically, it would be compressed into a very narrow, everything's fine, everything's fine, everything's fine. Oh, AGI is everywhere. So what we're seeing is lots and lots of uses of LLMs, of AI technologies. There's an explosion in the AI, and it is going, it feels quite dizzyingly fast. That fits more with a slow takeoff because we are seeing the change.
Also, is it reasonable to say, due to the limitations of hardware, it's a little difficult for fast takeoff scenarios to be practical?
No, I wouldn't say that. We don't know how much hardware is necessary to run a superintelligence, and hardware is getting pretty close to comparisons with the human brain, which we know can run some form of AGI. So I would expect that we probably have enough hardware for that. Some of the large companies today already have enough hardware to run an AGI if we had an AGI to run.
Understood. In terms of existential risks, how do you prioritize AI risk? I mean, obviously, in my assumption, because you're working on AI risk, I think you'll place it at the top. But do you think it's the most immediate risk, existential risk that we face?
It's the most likely. It's, I mean, the asteroid going over the big ones, the asteroid impact one is lower than we thought. And we're keeping track of quite a lot of asteroids quite well. Long period comets are even less likely, though we're not tracking them at all. Nuclear war is still a possibility, but is less likely to be an extinction event. Pandemics, we've had an experience of that, but the engineering, the bioengineering of it does not seem to be advancing fast. And I would say that AI is definitely the most worth worrying about at the moment, because AI is coming one way or the other. We can slow down the pace, we can do agreements, but we can't really stop it from happening. And AI would make all the other risks either much more dangerous or much less relevant, depending on if we handle it well or not. Like with a true superintelligence, then designing designer plagues would be easy to make and unleash. And also with a true superintelligence, climate change would be easy to control and reverse. So it seems to be, and for the first time, it seems to be on a clear, short schedule, even compared with other existential risks. So yes, now I've always been working on AI risk, but I would not have said that's necessarily the most urgent. But now, yes, it is the most urgent.
Understood. Can we talk about aligned AI?
Yes, I've been working for over a decade on AI issues, other existential risks as well, but it's focused quite early on AI, and spent a lot of time first at the sort of high-level philosophical concerns of what would it even mean to have a friendly or an aligned AI? How might we get towards that or recognize it? And my work was getting even more and more towards the practical end. And then I met Rebecca Gorman at one of my talks, and she has been working on AI alignment issues for current and near future AIs for quite a long time. And we talked and we realized that actually there was a connection between our concerns, the sort of super intelligence angle, and the current AI or near future AI alignments were actually part of the same problem, or could be made part of the same problem. And we saw how we could deal with that, and that in a sense, the ultimate challenge is to allow AIs to generalize correctly for human instructions, and therefore understand human intent. And so what we called concept extrapolation, the ability to extend concepts to new scenarios without breaking, became the driving force behind the company that we co-founded. Rebecca's first founder, and I came on board as well. And
when was this?
We met during COVID lockdowns, and talked a lot about things then, and AI itself was founded by a bit more than a year ago, about a year and a half now. Aligned AI was founded a bit more than a year and a half ago. And we spent a period developing the basic technology, which we have now developed to a sufficient level that we're now it's the time to deploy it, to use it, to sell it, to make these aligned LLMs and other products.
So before we go on to deployment, so you started off during the COVID lockdown, at least the discussions started during the COVID lockdowns.
You are breaking up entirely there.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, yes.
Okay. Your initial discussion started during the COVID lockdowns, which was around 2020, 2021. By that time, a lot of these companies, I think DeepMind was already in, I think, about a decade in. And I think OpenAI was already, I think, about five, six years in. Mm-hmm. Did you not think that, did you not feel that you're getting into the space a little late? Did that not bother you? Or did you not have that, I don't want to push it, but the, like fear type of situation? I don't know.
We did not see any evidence that any of them had properly solved the alignment problem, that their approaches were going to be sufficient. And we haven't really seen any strong evidence since then either. So this is to his credit. It's not a criticism of Sam Altman, but he was saying, please regulate us to prevent us destroying the world. Slightly paraphrased. I don't think he said something quite as strong as that. But this is not the behavior of someone who is confident that they have a way of aligning these very powerful models that they're creating. So we think, yes, we need to put the alignment technologies out there. The world is waiting for us. That's a grandiose way of stating it, but yeah.
Right, but before the world, I mean, you'll have to meet a venture capitalist, right? So in that sense, I'm curious as to, is it difficult to sell a company? Is it difficult to kind of convey the message of alignment, with let's say VCs or your colleagues maybe? Trying to convince them this is something that it is important to go for and it's worthwhile to go for. Is there friction there where many people might just want to see a commercial product per se and not very interested in alignment issues per se? Mm-hmm. Did you feel that experience, or are people more receptive to it?
Not really. I mean, famously, it's hard to get people to invest in safety until after a disaster has happened. But we're not really selling safety. We are selling increased reliability. We're selling the ability that you can use the power of these large language models without worrying that it is going to go terribly wrong, without worrying that you're going to have to lock down. Like, the GPT-4 is kind of very... If you ask it any controversial question, it will now go into, as a large language model, I cannot talk about, or some things say, some people think that murder is wrong, but others have argued that murder is right. Or again, a slight exaggeration, but not much, because it has been locked down from saying anything that approaches anything controversial. So it's another example of the fact that since it isn't reliable enough, you can't use it. You can't use its full functionality. So we are selling alignment, and with that alignment, we are selling increased functionality. And that has been, so far, this has not been a message that has been difficult to pass. And apart from this broad strokes, I can't comment further on VCs or any conversations that we're having with them.
Sure. How was your is this your first time building a startup?
Yes.
How are you finding it? Like, has it been the experience that you went in thinking about?
I mean, it is fascinating. It is such a period of learning. Of you have to learn to make snap judgments with partial information, and figure out when it's worth getting more information and not. I was going to say that it's not at all like academia, but it's not at all like established businesses either, who have sort of strong business plans that they're following. It is, it has been described by Mr. Blank, who has written a lot about Silicon Valley and worked a lot in Silicon Valley itself, that it's, you're exploring to find a business model. That's what a startup is. It is an experiment to find a business model that works. And so the amount of iteration and change and judgment calls and dealing with people.
Like, how would you, in your experience, like, what major differences have you noticed between, let's say, a research institute that you might have been part of? I'm considering the Future of Humanity as a research institute here. Maybe a research institute that you might have part of, or other institutions that you might have been part of, and maybe working at a company, at a startup per se.
So, in a sense, the Future of Humanity Institute was closer to a startup than most academic institutes. In most academic institutes, what you're trying to do is you're trying to solve a problem or a small subset of problems, and you're trying to solve them well. The objective is, yes, this cures schizophrenia. No, this does not cure schizophrenia. These are the statistics. This is how much of an impact it has. Let us investigate it exhaustively and publish it, and so that we can get closer to sort of being able to say, give definite answers to a narrow and specific problem. In the FHI, there was always the, yes, you work on that, but always think about what the most important problem is. So don't waste, just go deep on important problems. And for a business, and especially a startup, it is much more, this seems to work. I could investigate it more to be sure that it works. But even if it did work, would that be a big enough result? Should I move on? So basically, I have had to move on from projects that looked like they were working well, which is something that is quite difficult for me, because they were working well, but they required too much effort, and even if successful, would not justify the return of effort on my part. And there are other more promising things that might not have been initially sure that they were working, but if they did work, they'd be massive. So you would have to. So yes, giving up on things that seems as if they could be made to work.
I'm so sorry, but has there been a case where you had to let go of some project, but in retrospect, it ended up being you had to let go of it, but eventually it became a huge project. Maybe somebody else worked on it. Has there been a case like that?
Not really, no. The ones that we've let go have been justified, or as far as we can tell. There were some things of maybe we should have published or talked about it sooner, or we should have gone forward with something sooner. So in a sense, maybe we didn't jump onto things fast enough, but there was nothing that that I can immediately think of where I said, well, I really should have spent more time absolutely finishing all the details there.
Understood. I don't know if we can speak to this, but in terms of like product development, have you faced like some major hurdles that were kind of unexpected? I don't know, in terms of like data gathering or just training models, or which seem straightforward but were very complex?
None of the technical problems that you seem to be alluding to. The main problems has been finding a product market fit. And in a sense, we were thinking too small for a short period. We were thinking, we have our technology, can we apply it to these specific cases, maybe start running a business on that? And then we came back to our senses and said, no, if we get an aligned, powerful systems, and not necessarily full LLMs, but even things in that direction, then that can be used all over the place. And so we realized, yes, let's return to our roots. We are building powerful, aligned AI systems, and that is what we are doing. And that is our our business proposition flows from that. And then things became easier. But we did think too small for a short period of time.
Has your confidence in like building aligned systems increased after you have started working on this? Yeah. Like in a sense, sometimes, you know, philosophically, we make certain assumptions and you think about, you know, this is possible, that is possible. But when you enter the playground, you get to realize, you know, things are not what they seem and some of the assumptions turn out to be false. How has that worked out for you in that sense?
Things have, in my judgment, turned out to be slightly easier than I was expecting.
Okay. Understood.
Oh, sorry. I didn't. Yeah, that's basically it.
Okay. Could you give us, Future of Life Institute, could you give us your experience working there? Like, how was it?
It was a very positive, very creative place where people were thinking about the big or maybe a huge problems that could happen to humanity. It's sort of, we are thinking, we're using our brains. We're all academics, so we're proud of our brains and thinkings and debating and stuff like that. So we're using the sort of part of us that we've been most valuing to make a real difference to really important problems in the world. And there was a lot of fun craziness in terms of ideas as well. So yes, it was a great place.
And like, how do you spend your time nowadays, like day to day? Like, is it mostly like technical stuff, or is it mostly management stuff?
A mixture of the two, or a mixture of the 20 different roles that a founder of a startup has to do. That's been one of the, you can't just be one thing, especially not at the beginning. You have to take on other roles, communications, interviewing people, running the technical things, interfacing with potential clients, design of the technology, some amount of research. Yeah, anyway, you do a lot.
Understood. Finally, like, how do you think people should, so let me set some context in the sense that, so you're working on AI risk, you're working on AI alignment or in the field of AI, which implicitly means that you assign that to be very important, and that's why you're spending your time doing it. How do you think people should evaluate what they work on in terms of like how can we think about our priorities and, you know, what matters to us per se? Like, is there some framework that you could share?
Well, there are, there is, so I'd recommend that those that can work in AI alignment do. So it's a very important question that needs to be solved. And though we are fairly confident of solving it, it's never a bad thing to have lots and lots of more people on this crucial problem. Otherwise, I mean, in a sense, so as I said, work, the idea of work is vastly simplified, 2 centuries old. It's not exactly the case, and real historians will definitely tell me that the Roman Empire had salaried work and that kind of things. But the idea of identifying yourself through your work is, I think, an idea that won't last. Or the idea of identifying yourself through your salaried work, or that your positive contribution to your world, to the world, you derived from your salaried work, is something that only a few people can have, who have particularly important or relevant jobs. I think that people finding their meaning through charity work, through their social connections, and through maybe what they do with the money they get from their salaried work. Like, there are some very valuable Against Malaria Foundation, or the bed net distribution thing, seems to be saving lots and lots of lives for a relatively low cost. And that would be a good way for many people if you feel the connection there, to do good in the world. But I would say that, unfortunately, it is not many people can have a job, a salaried job, that is also giving them full flourishing towards improving the world in the way they would want. I'm hoping that after AI, more people could live their lives improving the world. But yeah, I'm lucky enough to have had salaried jobs, and now being in a startup where the sort of financial angle and the improving the world angle are running in parallel. But I know that most people are not so lucky.
Right. So I was saying, in one of the presentations that you gave, I think you speak about a few people who have made significant, they have helped a lot of people. I think you speak about the inventor of the Haber-Bosch process, and I think another one, I don't remember his name, but he helped in the agricultural process as well.
Borlaug,
yeah.
I mean, the inventor of the Haber-Bosch process also invented chemical warfare.
Right.
He's not a wholly positive figure.
Right.
let's be honest about that.
The larger point is, like, but in case you end up solving alignment, or your company ends up solving alignment, it will obviously go down in history as a very significant chapter in human life. Do you think about that?
Sometimes. If it's the sort of selfish thing that I would use if I felt a flagging of motivation, because I could think of the, but in general, I don't tend to think on that. I've sort of realized, yes, this is the way, to quote the Mandalorian. This is the right way to make things happen, to do that. This is my path, and I'm not too concerned about the sort of fame and glory, which would be nice to have, undoubtedly, though famous people don't seem to be necessarily happy with it. But in any case, no, I don't think about it much. But I would think about it if it was sort of an extra source of motivation, because we have to use our selfish impulses to push forward sometimes.
Understood. On that note, I wish you all the best in your path. And Stuart and Jess, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you.